Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of Tea Time, the podcast. And on today's episode, I have with me Tay Francis. I brought her on today's episode because I found that it's time for us to dive into a very important topic. And that topic is diversity, equity, and inclusion in the online space as Caribbean-based providers. Now, just a little backstory of how we got here today. Let me just introduce who Tay is and I will get into all of that. Tay Francis is a lifelong writer with over 10 years of experience as an award-winning social impact researcher. Growing up between the Caribbean and the United Kingdom, Tay learned early on that she would never fit into just one box. Tay lives and works at the intersections of logic, science, spirituality, and energetics. With her background in psychology and development studies, Tay is an expert facilitator and gifted teacher who is passionate about diversity, socioeconomics, and geopolitics, as she is about astrology and human design. Welcome to Tea Time. It's such an honor to have you here.
Thank you so much for inviting me. I'm so happy to be here and to have this really important conversation about being Caribbean entrepreneurs in the space.
Yeah, I really am like looking forward to this conversation because it's like this elephant in the room that we as Caribbean people, we know it exists. Some of us may not know how to articulate what we're experiencing well. And I feel like this is the perfect place, a safe space where we can explore this topic, give people a place to feel validated, where they can just exhale, like, okay, I'm not crazy, and really explore all the factors at hand and even bring forward some solutions. So like after we've exhaled, we've let it out, how do we move forward from here? Now, to give you all a little bit of backstory, I met Tay through Instagram threads. And it kicked off from this very topic where she made a thread post and either someone shared it and I saw it and we just connected from there. We just like hit it off. And I feel like this topic could do so much for our community in terms of bringing us together. To unite where this is concerned, because I feel like we're kind of like suffering in silence and isolation. So welcome again. And, you know, you could just give us a little bit of your backstory. You could chime in.
Yes. So thank you again, Cassia, for having me on this podcast. I think this is a topic that has always been near and dear to my heart. I remember the thread that I posted. I would have been a little bit frustrated about being a Caribbean entrepreneur in this online space and having to jump through all these hoops to get payments because most of my clients are not in the Caribbean, they're in the US or they're in Canada. And we didn't, noticing that we don't have access to certain payment providers, like we don't have access to Stripe and we don't have access to this. And I was just so frustrated. So I made that post. And
yeah.
So I got such a huge response on that post as well, with so many other Caribbean people saying, yes, I feel this. I feel the same way. And when you invited me onto the podcast, I'm like, yes, we need to have this conversation. We need to talk about this.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. This is such an important conversation that we do need to have. One thing I do want to take a moment to say is Happy Black History Month. I feel like it's so special that we're having this conversation during the month of Black History. But tell me a little bit more about your backstory, how you came to be the DI expert that you are today, and kind of connect your origin story to where you are now.
Sure. So my origin story is kind of all over the place. There are so many parts. And sometimes I do look at where I am now. I'm like, how did I get here?
Explain this.
But my background really started, I grew up in Trinidad, of course. And then when I was 12 years old, my family relocated to the United Kingdom because my stepfather would have gotten a work position over there. So we all moved abroad and I was enrolled in a boarding school. It was one of a very prestigious boarding school in the UK, but I was one of exactly three Black students in that school. There were only three of us. I think there were four people of color in total and three Black students.
That sounds really familiar. My cousin growing up in Canada, yes, very similar.
Yes. So I, at that point, I think was the first time I really had to encounter my race and my Global South status. I remember it was the first day of school. This little, she was like a small blonde girl, you know, she was in my class and she walked up to me and she said, "Where are you from?" And I told her I was from Trinidad and Tobago. And she said, "Is that a country? Where is that? Do y'all have planes there?" And I remember being like, "How do you think I got here?"
Yeah.
So yeah. I had that experience in my formative years, and that along with having family that was very politically and academically inclined, I was always really interested in these kinds of topics. So yeah. That solidified my interest in looking at where is the Caribbean on the global stage. And this is like when I was 12 years old. So
yeah, there's so much ignorance with regards to anything outside of that first world bubble. You know, like I can relate to your story there, because part of my origin story, spent a lot of time in Canada with my cousin, who is almost like my sister. We tell everyone we're sisters. And every time I was in Canada, and you talk to kids your age who are white, they ask weird questions like, "Do you all have electricity?" It almost makes you feel like you're Tarzan, that we swing on vines and we're like so remote, like we're from the jungle essentially. And it was like so mind-boggling. It's so crazy.
Yes, you know, being asked if we have roads. And I was a little bit, I've always been a little spicy as a person. So when she asked me that question, I was like, "No, we swam here."
I love that response. Well deserved, though. I mean, it's like what they're exposed to is not their fault, especially as children, but it speaks a lot to what Western media showcases outside of Canada, US, UK. Like those three main, I would like to like focus on. Like what do they show? Like it's not a jungle. It's the same places that you look forward to vacationing to.
Yes. And, you know, we have this, I'm glad you said vacationing, because a lot of people think of the Caribbean and they think of this sun, sea, sand thing, right? It's like, oh, well, this is vacation.
We need to coin that the triple S, sun, sea, sand. Triple S.
Yes. Yes, the you know, they think of the Caribbean as the triple S region, and it's the way you come to unwind and you go to the beach and that's pretty much it. But there are real people doing real business here. And, you know, coming from Trinidad, where we were never a touristy society, we're an economic society. And having these conversations and people being like, "Oh, do you go to the beach every day?" and stuff like that. That really fueled my interest in positioning us on the global stage as not just a tourist destination where you go when you're tired of your global north life. So when I, after my, you know, initial experience in the UK, I would have gone into psychology because I wanted to understand how people think, and I wanted to get a good background in doing research so that I knew how to understand what people think and how to speak to people. And if I knew if I wanted to look at where the Caribbean was on the global stage, I needed to know how to talk to people and how to understand what was in their heads. And that then led me into development studies because I wanted a broader lens and I really wanted to look at what is the history of the Caribbean, what is the history of the world of globalization, and also get an understanding of demography and how people migrate, how people move, what are the factors that actually influence the way that we live in community and society together. So that is my academic background. So I really came from research and behavioral science and sociology, that kind of background. And that led me into market research in my career, which I left during the pandemic because I got very sick. I got a chronic illness. So I got very, very sick and I ended up having to leave corporate and I started my own business. And then, of course, ending up on Instagram and social media and on this global stage and then having to contend with all of the issues with being a Caribbean service provider on those platforms. And it really was just like, okay, I have all of this background in development studies and all of this, so I can use my knowledge to talk about these issues that nobody's talking about.
Wow, I love your story. And I'm just so happy and honored to have, you know, for us to cross paths. And also that you are in this space, because I feel like you're that light that we need to really talk about this. Because ever since, like, I used to have a hard time trying to articulate this. And I know it's real. And ever since realizing it only went off as a light bulb really recently that this falls under DEI issues, you know. So to come across someone like yourself, I realize that the work that you're doing, just not just here with this conversation, is so needed. It really is. So on that note, let's discuss the factors that stifle an equitable online space, you know, the geotagging you mentioned, Instagram, the suppressing, you know, even when it comes to affiliate marketing, we get things like, we don't support that region, you know, Instagram doesn't roll out certain features until long after, you know, you want to have a YouTube channel and they just kind of box you into wherever you're located. And while we do understand why the apps do that, it does a huge disservice when the content that we want to create, that we want to put out, is of a certain stature, it's on a certain level, and we know our immediate audience doesn't resonate with that. It's the content that we want to create isn't targeted for where we're located, you know, and there's so many factors at play here that it also feels like it's bordering on discriminatory. We're frustrated by so many different things, all of the things I just mentioned, what you mentioned. It also seems as though white supremacy, white privilege, and I'll even go further to say American privilege is still perpetuated, even though we are on the World Wide Web. So even though we are online, there are still limits. There's still virtual borders. And the fact is, immigrating is just not an option for everybody. So we hop on the internet and we think it's fair game, you know, equal opportunity. And it just seems that all these systems are working against us. And for people like us who come across very alien, you know, because of the language we might speak, the accent that we have, the location because of the, you know, the geotagging. What are your thoughts about this? Yes. What has been your experience? Oh, you know what? Yeah.
I have so many thoughts. So many thoughts. So one thing you said is American supremacy. And I think that is something that's really important, because when you look at the major social media that we're using, Facebook, Instagram, and to a lesser extent, well, TikTok is obviously Chinese, but looking at Facebook, Instagram, even WhatsApp, even Snapchat, those sorts of things, all of those companies are located, the headquarters are located in the US. So they are subject to US regulations, US sanctions, US agreements. So whatever agreements there are like we have certain financial agreements with the US, right? That means that if a company is located in the US, they cannot circumvent those financial regulations and agreements that are in place with the region. So they are literally subject to US laws and regulations. And we are at a disadvantage because many times we have agreements that limit the way that we can trade on an international stage. So when you have all of these companies with billions of users on their platforms, but they're all located in the US, it really isn't fair game, even though it says that it's fair game. It's not, because once you're not in the US, you are automatically at a disadvantage. So one thing that I always get frustrated about is Stripe, because Stripe is the major payment provider for so many websites. It's the payment provider for my blog, actually, where I host my blog. So if you want to have paid memberships, you have to have a Stripe account. Stripe is not available in the Caribbean region. So the entire Caribbean region is left out of the majority of these services because they do not have access to a Stripe account. We used to have access to Wise. We no longer have access. You cannot have a new Wise account as somebody in Trinidad and Tobago anymore. I'm not sure why that happened
really?
And why they took it off.
I've heard about Wise for so long. I mean, I never explored it because I didn't need it. But I thought Wise was still readily available because I see so many people locally still talking about it.
No,
but
you
that's
can.
Really interesting.
You used to be able to have a Wise account, but sometime during the pandemic, I don't know if it's because they had so much volume and they weren't able to keep up with the volume, they stopped. So you cannot create a new Wise account. They have a wait list right now.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's just talking about payments, right? Talking about, let's say, Instagram and TikTok. Sometimes we don't have
visibility,
access to trending sounds, to filters. So there's all these trends that everybody's saying, hop on this trend and it's gonna help you increase your visibility, but you don't have access to the trending sound, so you don't rank on the algorithm. And by the time you get access to the sound, it's already gone because trends go like that. They're so fast. So it literally limits your ability to grow your business. You have to try harder. You have to make more content. You have to do more work just to get half as visible on these platforms. And that's frustrating.
Half as visible. It is very frustrating because I think a lot of our American peers also take for granted that what you see, your version of the internet is completely different to ours. We don't want to admit it, but it is. Because if we come out and we admit that our version of the internet, or should I say maybe social media, is different to yours, it also kind of does us a disservice because it's almost like we're saying, oh, they don't really have internet access, which we're already trying to work against these misconceptions about what is available to us out here. And how much we actually know and how technologically advanced we are. We're advanced as people. It's just that we don't have full access to everything that we want to partake in. So can we just take a moment and finally acknowledge that this is a real problem, that we're not just sitting here whining and complaining that, oh, I can't be seen by it's the algorithm. Our issues are just even bigger than the algorithm. You know, it's not the tip, like people in the US struggle with the algorithm on like this level, but we struggle with it like on this level.
Yeah.
You know, like whatever you're experiencing with social media as a frustration, ours is compounded 10x. So yeah, I just want to take a moment to acknowledge that this is a real problem for Caribbean people and our other immigrant brothers and sisters of color. Like, I'm so tired of kind of being gaslighted, and not intentionally, but like feeling like I sound crazy or complainer or coaches, you know, from first world countries telling you to just run some ads that we have the internet. Like, I had a coach tell me, we have the internet. surely you can find two clients per month who will pay that kind of money. Like, yeah, we will find the clients, but will they pay that kind of money that your coaching program is teaching us to, you know, do simply based off of our own personal branding? Because if, as people of color, we already have these factors working against us, we simply can't show up in our authenticity with our personal brands intact. It's almost like you can't really truly fully be yourself and have people take you seriously.
And, you know, I do get it in terms of the algorithm and the platforms. We are, the Caribbean is a group of small island developing states, which means that our population is not huge on the global scale, right? We have, what, 1.4 million people here. That is the population of the city of Philadelphia, right? That is how small we are in Trinidad and Tobago.
Yeah.
And the entire region is, it's a small region. So I do understand in terms of volume and rollout, I get it. I get why we may not be top priority.
Yeah, I get it as well.
At the same time, though, Trinidad and Tobago is a major economic powerhouse in the world. We're a major economic player on the energy field, in the oil and gas industry. We are a major exporter of energy products and natural gas products and stuff like that. We're also a major import point between North America and Latin America. So I'm kind of also fed up of knowing, hey, we're such a big economic player on one stage, and on the other stage, I can't get Instagram filters or captions on my stories. Are you kidding me? No. Yes. So I'm a little frustrated about walking this line almost. And in your intro, you just said, you know, I don't live in just one box, and I always feel like I have one foot on one side and one foot on the other side, which is, I understand it, I understand the technical aspect of it, but as a service provider, I just want to be on a more even playing field. I don't want to have to wait 3 months to get things that people are telling me, hey, we just got this Instagram update, but actually, no, I can't use that update. Or, hey, you can do this by just opening a Stripe account or a PayPal account. Well, actually, if I want to get money from PayPal, I have to open a very specific type of bank account. And then I could only withdraw on certain days and time periods and a certain amount. Like, it's, you know, we have bills to pay here. We have lives to live.
And I feel like as you were speaking, I'm thinking about how we still don't even have like something as simple as captions in Instagram.
Like, yes. We don't have captions on stories or automated captions on Instagram. Like, and let's even add an element of DEI to this, of diversity to this. I'm neurodivergent, I'm autistic, and I have ADHD. So captions are something that is so important to me as an accessibility feature, because a lot of times I have a hearing sensitivity, so I don't want to have my speaker on, or like I have light sensitivity and stuff like that. So I want to be able to have to see captions, and I also want to cater to the autistic and ADHD and other neurodivergent people in my audience, because I have quite a few of them in my audience. But if I want to post something with captions, I have to record it, then export it from Instagram, then upload it into CapCut, then upload the captions, then edit the captions, upload it back into Instagram. And instead of it just being this one step, like I turn on my camera and I hit record, which is everybody saying, it's so easy to grow your business, you just turn on your camera and hit record. No, I actually have 5 steps before I can publish something on Instagram. It doesn't take 5 minutes. It takes 30. And that in itself is a barrier to growing your business, because it takes so much more time to do simple things. And now you have to be a lot more intentional about your time and about what you can do in order to grow your business. And all of that, all of those things come together in the experience as a Caribbean entrepreneur to create all of these barriers. So like you said, the algorithm is here for the US, but then we have like all of these barriers and we're all the way up here until we could actually make a single post. So it's harder to grow your platform. It's harder to grow your business. It's harder to do everything. And I understand why so many Caribbean entrepreneurs are just like, is it even worth it? I'm so tired. I'm overwhelmed. I'm frustrated. I get it, because it is harder. And I want anybody who's listening to this to know it's not just you. It's not just you. You are not making it up. Don't let yourself be gaslit by these coaches and these hats and these silk shirts. Like, don't. No, it's not just you.
Woo! Yes, thank you. Like, now that it's out of the way, you know, if you're listening to this and you are one of my American peers or Canadian peers or wherever you may be, or even if you're just from Trinidad, whoever is listening to this, this is a real issue as it relates to diversity, equity, and inclusion. You know, there's so much talk about inclusion, but what about Caribbean people who don't live in the Caribbean? You know, even some of our Caribbean peers, sometimes they don't get it because they think, well, it's not that we're Caribbean. It has nothing to do with that, but sometimes just simply being off of the quote-unquote mainland, you get looked over, you know, you don't get taken as seriously. And there's just a host of other issues, but I love that you used that example coming off of me speaking, mentioning captions, because that is just one simple example of the hoopla that we have to go through. And that is just scratching the surface.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, so my question here, so this one is a little, you know. So another thing that we have observed is that in a global aspect, they are always looking to sell to us, right? But not so much buy from us unless they're coming for a vacation, unless they're coming for a retreat and to relax. You know, unless it's a vacation or a good time or it's carnival. I believe this stems from conditioning of white supremacy. What has been your experience as a DEI expert? What can you unveil about this? Where does this stem from? You know, am I wrong about this? Is this, you know, another thing in my head?
No, I don't think that you're wrong about it. I think that you can hit the nail on the head there with saying that we've been conditioned by white supremacy to be seen as somewhere to relax, you know. And when I say white supremacy, I'm also talking about imperialism and colonization. You know, we've been conditioned and positioned as this carefree place. You know, Trinidad and the Caribbean is about carnival and beaches, and you know, that's what it's about. And it makes it more difficult as a serious service provider to be taken seriously online, because people will ask me, like, you know, what's your accent? If I'm on live, people ask me, oh, I love your accent. Where are you from? And if I say from Trinidad, all of a sudden the content of my life is completely derailed, because there are people asking me, do you go to the beach all the time? Do you do this? What is it like? Is it sunny? Oh my gosh, I love the weather. And I remember a time I was doing a live and somebody was like, oh, I love the weather. And it was a full-on storm outside. It was like lightning. It was terrible. I was cold because everywhere was cold. My cat, she was scared because it was thunder and lightning. And this person on the internet is like, oh my God, I'm sure the weather is amazing. And I'm like, no, it's not. No, it's not. And it also derailed the conversation from the topic. And I will also get, sometimes people will say, you know, if I know somebody, I'll refer them to you. If I know somebody who could use your services, I'll refer them to you. And I'm like, you could use my services. You could use them. You need them too. I'm a copywriter. My first language is English. I'm a writer. I've been writing for my entire life. I'm a researcher. Like, my first language is English, and your website can use my copywriting services. Don't So yeah, I do think you're very right, because we are viewed as consumers, not as experts and service providers. And it takes a
Hold that thought. I have to chime in with my own experience there. That's why I'm like, I can count numerous times, especially early on in my online business journey, that I would hop on a discovery call. We're here to talk about business. We're here to talk about how I can help you, how I can serve you. You know, these are my skills. Like, you can see everything. You come prepared with everything, right? And it's, as you said, you just become just devalued down to where you're from as soon as you open your mouth to speak. Of course, you know, they would ask the questions, they go on with the call, but it's like there's this burning desire to ask you, oh my gosh, where are you from? And it's like, we're happy to say where we're from, that's the thing, but because this isn't our first rodeo, you instantly feel, oh, here we go. Okay, yes, this is where I'm from. But then you have to give that placement. But I'm based in so and so, because that is your only foothold, right? Because, you know, some of us, we are based, you know, here and there, and we go back and forth, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. But when you're on the internet, you're on your computer, and you have to, like, give context to your background and your familiarity that, hey, I'm just like you. You know, I watch the same shows as you. You know, we really aren't that alien. We're not that alien, right? And they ask you, okay, where are you from? You tell them where you're from, and you suddenly feel the shift in the room, the virtual room. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. it's like you get same statement. Okay, well, I'll get back to you. And then you're ghosted. You don't hear anything. That's one. The other thing is the same thing you just said. Oh, I will let people know about your services. But then you see them working with someone else. And it's like, hi, I'm here. Like, you see my content on Instagram. You see me. You engage. But yet you just don't see me in the light to buy from me. But you're always in my inbox. And this is obviously general statements from several different scenarios where it's like they want to sell you. Come into my program. Buy this, buy that. But you know, you clearly need X, but you're not looking to the Caribbean person to buy from them. But yeah, they ask you where you're from, and the conversation gets derailed. So it's either the room shifts from, you know, here's how I can serve you. Can we just focus on how I can serve you? Not so much like where I'm from and what I'm doing and, you know, the weather and the beach and all. So like, yeah.
Yes. And I think that's such a good point that you raised about the discovery call, because, you know, you jump on a discovery call and the first thing you might ask is, and the first thing my business coach taught me to ask when I first started my business was, you know, connect about where you're from. And I quickly realized that is not the first question that I can ask in a discovery call. No. Because as soon as I ask that, as you say, it shifts the tone, it shifts the energy of the room, and I am no longer positioned as an expert. So I had to change the question that I asked to connect.
Yeah, like we're right back to our childhood where they're like, oh, where are you from? Do you have electricity kind of vibes? It really is, yes, frustrating, because that point you made really hit a nerve, because it feels kind of so patronizing when it's like, oh, I'm going to let people know about your services. And some of them actually do send tons of people my way. But have you actually spent a dollar with me? You haven't spent $1 yet.
Mm-hmm.
So then if you haven't spent a dollar, why do you think, or why are you surprised that when you send people my way, it's any different? And then we're all mm-hmm. puzzled, like, oh my God, I don't know why.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly. And I think it adds to it, because there are levels to this, right? You know, as I say, there are levels to it. It's not just that you're a Caribbean service provider. It's also that you're from the Caribbean, you're a Black woman, you're, and each one of these levels adds to the barriers and the obstacles that you have to face. Because as a woman, it's already harder to compete. You know, we know this. We know that there's still a gender pay gap in both professional corporate spheres and in business. Then there's the race pay gap, where Black people earn less and they have less access to funding, they have less access to investors, they generally, their businesses are smaller than their white counterparts. And then you add the Caribbean on top of that, then it's another dimension. So it is all of these things that are contributing to making it harder for us to compete on the global scale. And even though it's supposed to be even, it's like, oh, anybody can have a business online. Well, yes, anybody can, but is it going to be profitable and supportive?
Well said. Yeah. You know. Yeah, because no, we carry the burden, the same issues that Black people in America speak about all the time. So we carry that same burden and then some.
Mm-hmm.
And then,
yeah,
sad to say that we also face this from our own African-American brothers and sisters, you know?
Yes.
We just kind of get lost in the sea.
Yeah.
No pun intended.
Yes, and I often in the sea. And I often, even in the DEI space, you know, I'm a DEI facilitator. I've been a DEI practitioner for a very long time. I've been a domestic violence and gender-based violence researcher and all of those things. And even in the DEI space, I will find myself being the only Caribbean person in a room full of people of color. And everybody's talking about the struggles that they face, but it's very American or European struggles. And I have to be like, okay, hey, it's a little bit different here. Yes, we have some of the similar things, but here's a perspective that you have not considered. And I often find myself in that position, even in the DEI space, much less outside of it where we're competing just like in marketing or even in, I do a lot of astrology and human design. In the astrology and human design space, it is overwhelmingly white. It is an overwhelmingly white space. So, and even the Black spaces are very American. So I have to always bring in, hey, this is my perspective as a Black Caribbean person in this space, and it's a little bit different here. And yeah, it's always this struggle. And I am privileged. I do feel privileged to be able to be in those spaces and articulate these things on behalf of my Caribbean brothers and sisters. At the same time, we need more of us. We need more of us to be invited into these spaces and to be invited to compete on the global sphere.
Yeah. You know, that brings me to a question that brings up two things. I myself have always noticed when it comes to these panels, where are our Caribbean people? You know, where is the Caribbean perspective on these panels, these conferences, etc.? I always ask, where are we? And not just because I'm asking for myself, but overall, like, I have no one that I could really look up to, because, you know, everybody, if there's a Caribbean person, they were born there, they're like, you know, not like first generation, et cetera, et cetera. But where are us actually, yeah, on the stage? There's that. But then sometimes I also feel kind of excluded. So that brings me a question. As a DEI expert, do you ever experience, well, who are you to come and talk about DEI issues? Like, you don't know anything about our experience in America or Canada, or, well, you could probably speak to the UK because you've lived there, but I just mean generally speaking, do you ever feel like, oh, we don't really want to hear from you because you're from the Caribbean?
I can't say I've ever felt like we don't want to hear from you. But I have experienced the kind of, oh, well, you don't really understand how things work in our society. And I have experienced I have experienced that from like African Americans in this space, and this is no tea, no shade to my African American brothers and sisters. I love y'all. I'm just talking about my experience, that I have had the experience be like, oh, well, you don't actually understand because you've said it's different in the Caribbean. And this is where I become very grateful that I did live in the UK and in Germany, because then I can bring up that experience and say, well, actually, I grew up in the UK for a significant portion of my adolescence, and then I lived in Germany for quite a while as well, and I studied there. So I do understand what it's like to be a Black person in a white majority country. And it's only when I say that, that there's a degree of legitimacy afforded to my opinions. And I'm grateful to have that experience, but what does it say for the people who don't have that experience, for the people who can't speak to that? Do they just get silenced? Do they get discarded? Do they just get not listened to? And that is a problem in and of itself, because I find that in the US especially, there's kind of this attitude that, okay, we're all Black people, so we all have the same problem. And it's like, no, we don't actually have the same problem. It's a little bit different as a Caribbean person. That doesn't mean that I have anything against you. I am absolutely going to stand in solidarity with you. But we don't have the same problem. And you don't have to pretend that we have the same problem to work together. Like I heard, I can't remember what podcast I heard this on, but somebody, it was a Black DEI expert in the US. He said, we don't have to see eye to eye to stand shoulder to shoulder. And I think that is so important. So important for us.
We need a lot more unity.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we need a lot more unity, because one of the points that I want to make at this point in the episode is that this is not a tit for tat. This is not us versus you all or them, or Caribbean Blacks versus American Black people. It's just that we just want our voice to be heard as well. Like, hey, you know, because the thing is, for me, my family, my cousins, they are born between US and Canada. My sister is, you know, American citizen. So growing up with them my entire life, I didn't see any differentiator that, Caribbean is different to America. That was actually a very new concept to me when my friend, a Black guy, a Black American, who his parents are Guyanese and Jamaican, told me, you know, you look different, you know, you look different. You don't actually look like Black Americans, because you all are more mixed down there and whatever. And he didn't mean it in an offensive way, like we're friends, right? And we're just talking. And I was like, this was the first time I was hearing this concept, like, you're different, like, you're not like Black Americans. And I was like, oh, okay then. Well, that was just it for me, because it's like, it doesn't matter, because at the end of the day, those specifics don't matter. We're all still Black. So I grew up with that mindset that, you know, I'm part of this community. Until now, in the online space, you start to feel the little bits of separations from some individuals, and it's obviously not everybody. But yeah, our issues definitely get overlooked, and not just the issues, because we'd really like for these issues to not exist, but the issue at hand is really that we just get overlooked in general.
And like to that point, I had a friend, well, I have a friend, she used to have quite a big Instagram that did like sustainability and plants and that sort of thing. Remember during the pandemic where everybody was getting house plants and there was the whole house plant craze. So she had quite a big following. And I remember having these conversations with her, because she would be talking about US people saying, oh, well, you can't use that kind of water, and you can't do this, and you can't do that. And her having to be like, well, we're in Trinidad, we don't have those things. We're like, it really doesn't matter. The environment is different. Water. Water's water. We don't really, the plants don't care either, you know. And she would face a lot of hate online to the point where she stopped doing that. She stopped posting and she didn't feel comfortable existing in her brand anymore because she was getting so much pushback from people in the US. And she was like, I'm just so tired of having to explain that, you know, it's different here. I just want to be able to post and exist. I don't want to have to fight all of these people all the time.
And it's very unfortunate that she felt like she had to stop posting.
Yeah. And it was such a good account. You know, it was so good. I was so proud that she had done all of this work and she had built her following. And I was really sad when she stopped posting. And I'm sure a lot of people were as well. But this is how we need that solidarity. We need to not have our Black brothers and sisters in the US critiquing us and instead lifting us up as well. Not saying that we're not open to critique, you know, critique is good, but not critiquing us based on the differences we have because of the region where we live.
Mm. Ooh, that's a good one. I feel like that needs to be said again. Us up. What do we need? We need unity, essentially. Yeah.
We need unity. We need unity. We need y'all to lift this up.
Okay, so I know like we've been on this call quite a while and I do want to pivot more to, you know, possible solutions and how we can better position ourselves because at the end of the day, we're out here doing it. We are pushing forward regardless. And it's been years and years of hitting the virtual pavement and networking and just constantly showing up. Shout out to Jay-Z. You know, we really continuously friggin' show up, you know?
Yes.
And that's how we're still here today. So we're going to eventually pivot to those solutions. But one last question, which you touched on, is fair compensation. You know, when the room shifts, it shifts to thinking, well, you should be paid less because you're not actually on U.S. soil or Canadian soil, etc. So the question is, so we have a client ready to work with us, but most times they are conditioned, it should be way cheaper. Let's discuss the need for fair compensation because honestly, I've reflected on this and it really only hurts the American economy and the American people ultimately if we're contributing to the devaluation of services. How can we navigate the expectations of clients wanting services at significantly lower rates and still ensure fair compensation for our work? Now, in all reality, I understand that one of our competitive advantages that we can provide high quality with the same level of quality, even higher quality in some instances, at a more affordable rate, especially for, you know, small business owners who are now starting out. Like, we bring value that we could be that more affordable option. But I feel like that's also a very dangerous rope to tread sometimes because it continuously perpetuates that we should be gotten paid less, especially like next to nothing. Lately, I've seen posts that Fiverr in, and it's like, I get it that inflation is crazy in the US and Canada at this time, but guess what? It's hitting us as well. We can't continuously, you know, work for that. And I am not on Fiverr. I'm not saying that, you know, I'm on Fiverr or Upwork or any of those things, but I'm just looking at it from a bird eye view and perspective of like what's probably happening in those countries that they probably need a little bit more than your custom paying pre-pandemic. You know, there's even sites where, you know, you can sign up for jobs remotely and they want to pay you significantly less. Like, how do you suddenly not have the budget for a job that pays six figures? You want to pay $35,000 a year. Like, that's doing a disservice because then what's the trickle-down fallout is that American people, Canadian people who actually should be getting these jobs really and truly are getting passed over for the person who is doing it for like 50% way cheaper. So what I'm trying to say is I believe that there should be a more of a middle ground. Like, it's like we're so extreme as a society. It's like we go from, hey, this is the cost here, but we want to go on the other end of the spectrum and pay this, instead of like trying to find like a healthy balance so that it still remains competitive, even for someone who is on US-based soil. I hope I explained that well. Sometimes the figures that I see, it's just like, it's so far from what the market rate in the US is. And I'm not saying that we should just come in and get exactly the same. In some cases, we could. And in some cases, I understand that's our competitive edge. But who is it really hurting in the long run?
Yeah.
And that's a tough,
you know, it really comes back. It really, yeah, it is a, but it's a good conversation because it really comes back to this idea of companies measuring success only by how much profit they make, and everybody wanting to expand and expand and expand their profit margins at the expense of the people who are doing the work on the ground. And it really speaks to us needing to reevaluate what success looks like. Reevaluate this idea of ever expanding profits when we have finite resources, because that's what's killing our environment too. We want expansion, 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 but we live in a finite earth with finite resources. So we need to reevaluate what success and progress looks like. And if it is that we are on this model, we're continuing this capitalist model of ever increasing profits and expansion, we are always going to be looking for cheaper labor. And to bring it back to what you talked about earlier about white supremacy culture and colonization, this is a new version of that colonization, because it is these European and global North powers looking for cheaper labor in the global South, in Black and brown people. And that's just not right. It's not right that this is the system that is continuing to exist. And what can we do about that? As people, as business owners, I think there's a lot of power in data. So for myself, you really have to have those testimonials and that data and that stuff to back it up. I always, always lead with my degrees and my expertise and the fact that I have 10 years of experience as a researcher. So if you want to pay me less, why do you want to pay me less? Because I have 10 years of experience as a researcher and a master's degree and certification. So I have to really, really put my expertise on my resume. And I want to encourage any Caribbean people listen to this, not to downplay your expertise because you think that somebody is not going to pay you. Lead with that expertise. Own your expertise. Own your position on the global space, because you have done the studies, you have done the work, you have the experience, and you are capable of doing those things. But unfortunately, the burden of proof is on you. You have to prove that, and you have to ask for it. As hard as it is, you have to ask for it. Because as soon as you say, okay, I could do it for less, that devalues you in that person's mind.
So and our people at large.
Yes, yes. So we have to ask for what we're worth. We have to own up to that and say, you know, I'm no longer going to charge 25% of what somebody in the US is going to do. It doesn't mean that you're going to increase it all the time to 100%, but maybe you increase it to 50 or 60% or 75%. And you do it incrementally so that collectively we raise the value of our intellectual expertise and intellectual resources as a region.
Okay. That's so good. That is a lot for us to like sit with and sit on. And honestly know that we could dive deeper and deeper into these topics and really explore colonialism, even, you know, right here in the Caribbean, specifically Trinidad. Like, you just see the effects of colonialism all around. And
all the time.
I just wish sometimes even our people can see it. I'm actually very passionate about prejudice is right here. But yeah, we could go so deep, and I feel like spin-off conversations would definitely take place, can take place, you know, part two of this. So what mindset shift we as a people need to have if we want to have success, if we want to be successful in the online world? Because I know keeping an ear to the ground, some of us are resistant to change in how we use Instagram to land business, because honestly, the fact of the matter is Instagram isn't our friend. It doesn't work for us the way it works for our peers in the US, Canada, and the UK, and people who are white adjacent, right? Because some of us live here and they get through because you're either white adjacent or you're white, but for everyone else, it doesn't work the same way. That's the raw facts. And we still want to show up like our peers and listen to the advice of popular online coaches who have no idea what our lived experiences are. So what mindset shift would you want to encourage us to embrace?
This is a good question. I think we have to be more willing to be creative and to work harder. And I know that sucks. I know that's what nobody wants to hear.
That's,
you have to work harder.
That stings. Yeah. Because we're already working harder.
It does. But it's very similar to what, you know, a lot of civil rights activists would have said in the US, which is that Black people need to work twice as hard to get half as far and half as much success. That applies to us too. And unfortunately, when we are starting out, especially, we need to work harder. We need to be more innovative. We need to be more creative. You need to experiment. Like, I like to talk about curiosity mindset. This is something that I use all the time for myself. If something's not working, get curious about why. What is it that's not working? Mm-hmm. What can I try differently? Embrace an attitude of experimentation with everything that you do online. Don't just try to follow everybody else's advice, because it's not going to work the same way. So get creative, get innovative, try things that are a little bit outside your comfort zone, because that's the only way you're going to figure out what's going to work. And then the other mindset shift is about visibility, is about being okay with being visible. Because I think because we know that we are seen differently, it's easier to hide. It's easier to say, oh, well, they don't really want to see us. They don't want to hear our perspectives. So I'm going to change how I approach things. I'm not going to be as visible. I'm going to be more in the background. And I would challenge us to be more visible, because that's the only way that we're going to change the perception of us on the global sphere. That's the only way that we're going to challenge the way that the region is perceived and get people to view us as more professional, is if we continue to show up. We have to show up. We have to be visible. We have to continue creating content and getting out there and doing blogs and podcasts. I think long form content is a fantastic way for us to get visible instead of relying on these like fleeting social media. We have to continue to do it even when we feel discouraged, because that is how we're going to get visible. That's how we're going to make the connections. That's how we're going to build the trust. And it's going to take a little bit longer to build the trust. So don't expect that you're going to go on and post twice and then people are going to buy from you. Don't expect that. Know that maybe you're going to have to take 3 to 6 months to build up so that people could really get to know you and trust you. And really change that perspective from the vanity metrics of followers and this and that to building community. to getting that know, like, and trust factor, to being okay with being consistent and being visible. We really have to get accustomed to being visible on the global stage.
You make a really good point there about the vanity metrics, because on one hand, and this is why I asked the question about mindset, on one hand, we know these issues are happening. We know it works against us, but yet we continuously still follow our peers out of habit, because that's what we're seeing. And I think sometimes we actually need to unplug from that content. You know, again, this is not hating on American media, but sometimes you have to mind your mental, because it does affect your behavior. It does affect your motivation, because everything that you're saying there requires you to protect what you take in mentally, because you're seeing, because we're bombarded with American media, we're seeing everyone doing this. So we automatically want to follow that as well, when we know that it's not going to work for us in the same way, you know? So, yes. And it's not just about it working for us, but just staying focused on, like, okay, this is who I am. This is my mission. Here's where I need to be if I'm going to make traction. This is what I need to be doing. And you're not saying, like, as you said, show up. But what are we doing outside of these apps? Are we sending the proposals? Are we, you know, working on our personal media kits? I know I, for one, am almost done with mine, and I'm really excited about it. But
that's awesome.
What are we making ourselves available for in terms of applying, sending out, getting the emails, and going directly to where we want to be versus just focusing on attraction marketing? You know, it all boils down to, just as what you said, the positioning through the long form or through the conferences, if we could speak. And we really need more representation, because really and truly, any one of us, I can't do it alone. I can't be the sole epitome of representation for Caribbean service providers. Neither can you. It has to work as a collective. Because it's a lot. It just can't be any one person. I think we just need that representation. We also have to a point that you made earlier, even, you know, we're just constantly seeing for sand, sun, sea, carnival. Fun fact, we're all not into carnival. We've done
nothing for carnival this year. Not a single fair. Although yesterday I wanted to go.
Yeah, and it's not to say that we're anti-carnival. I'm not in the least. I love Juve, but just that my priorities have shifted since becoming a mother. And, you know, this is what I love. I love technology. I love teaching about the apps. I love talking about, you know, how can you use even what we're recording on here today, Riverside, Canva, MailerLite, Mailchimp, Flowdesk. Like, we have so much knowledge outside of this box that we're putting, that we're just for Sansi, Sanrum, Punch, and carnival. Like, we're proud of that aspect of us, but there's just so much more to us.
Yes, and I think the major mindset shift is consuming less and creating more. The more we consume, the more we're going to get bombarded and overwhelmed by everything that we're seeing, the more that we're going to get discouraged, because we're like, why can't I achieve the results that this person is achieving? I did this, that this person said to do. Why isn't it working the same way for me?
And it hurts. So it really hurts your mental health.
It does.
It really does.
It does.
It really makes you feel to give up.
It gets you down in this place where you're like, maybe I should just, I can't tell you how many times I'm like, I should just pack up my business and call it a day. But that's not what we want to do, because there's so much value. There's so much intellectual resource and amazing, amazing people and just people doing amazing things in the Caribbean. We don't want people to get discouraged. We don't want you to stop sharing your message. But that means you have to limit what you consume and spend more time creating, spend more time going out there, spend more time doing the things. And that's why I say you need to work harder, but you also need to work different. it's not about just making posts and posting on social media, like you said. It's about building the foundations of your business, making sure that you have the things in place so that when somebody comes to work with you, it is easy for them to just work through the pipeline. It is.
No, yeah, that part is important, because sometimes I do feel a little bit of nervous advocating for us when I know many of us aren't really doing what we need to do at the same time in terms of investing in ourselves and those systems and looking the part. Because the fact of the matter is, and I spoke about this, I think last year, on Kalisha Mills did a webinar, and it was about visuals and how you put yourself together. Just putting together some half-assed thing, I mean, we have to do what we can until we can do better, but I feel like so many of us are stuck at doing what we can and not really pushing, because it's going to take sacrifice to get to the do better part. And it's like, on a global scale, I'm so sorry, people aren't going to take you seriously. And at some point, you're going to have to sacrifice something in order to purchase and elevate, you know, your personal branding or the visuals, et cetera, et cetera. You have to look the part, because we already have all these factors working against us. How are we going to earn this know, like, and trust factor if your presentation of who you are and your services isn't up to where it needs to be?
Yes. And I know that subscriptions, because there's so many subscriptions that you need, right? You need the MailChimp, and you need an active campaign, and a this and a that, and you have all of these things. And the costs pile up, especially when you're in the region, and US for us is 7-1. In other regions, it might be 3-1 and stuff like that. I understand in the global south that it is hard to purchase all of these different platforms, but there are also a lot of free, low cost, and open source platforms that we can do. So if I don't use MailChimp, because I think MailChimp is expensive and MailChimp doesn't have the features that I want, I use Brevo, which has an ability to send a certain amount of free emails. They have quite a few free resources. It's very professional looking, and it also has a paid option. But when I started off, I used it because it was free and it was professional looking. So you need to look around. You need to not just go to the common resources. You do need to do some research and see, okay, what are the options that I have? What do I absolutely need? So yes, you do need an email service provider. Yes, you're going to need to have your client agreements and your contracts and stuff like that. But maybe if you can't use the paid version of ClickUp, you set up a Notion space and you use it for free until you can pay for Notion. You know, there are so many ways that you can do things, but you have to think outside the box. The creativity and the innovation has to be there. It has to. That's the only way that we can compete on the global stage.
Well, I'm going to dish a little bit of tea. All right, because I'm going to have to call it out, because we can't explore all of these things, the external factors that are at play, without giving us some accountability. Okay, there's so many apps, there's so many subscriptions, etc., etc. But there's us. There's you, there's me, there's so many of us. Where's the simple investment in a consultation to know, hey, what should I focus on first? Because I know it's overwhelming. Many of us haven't taken that step either.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. I encourage any Caribbean person who's feeling stuck on their business, hire a business coach. You need
to
have
somebody. No, but here's the point I was getting at. The point I was getting at is, turn to your Caribbean brothers and sisters, because some of us would rather pelt out the US dollars to the American coach first before they turn to the people right here who can relate to their experience. They find the 5K, but then they can't find the 50K for one simple consultation.
And I was so grateful for the first conversation.
I'm so sorry. Ooh. But this is tea time, and I have to say it. It's what we do. You know, we look at the celebrity coaches. We look at the celebrity coaches on Instagram. Oh my God, I want to work with her. And we know it's in US. You know, we know it's in US, and it's not cheap. But then we turn around so many times. Yes, I come in to work with you. I have my eye on you, and we will say that over. And I come in to work with you. But you're still trying to piece all of these things together that they don't know anything about. But you went and you paid for that course. That's a good course, but it's still not helping you actually land the client. So you paid for the course to be an expert in X. But now that you're an expert in that, how are you figuring out your branding, your systems, your payments? You know, so, mm-hmm. And as you said, the email marketing software, there are options.
Yes. Yes.
So it's like we pick and choose when we can afford.
And so we're talking accountability. Radical accountability is one of my values. So let's be accountable here. When I started my business, I hired a Canadian coach. I hired a Canadian coach and I instantly regretted it because I was like, I can't do this. This is not going to work for me. This payment force is not going to work. And No tea, no shade to my coach. They were actually really helpful in terms of the systems that I needed to set up. But after I got out of that program, I was like, I should have hired a local coach. I should have hired somebody locally. But my problem at that time is I didn't know who to turn to. I wasn't sure where I should go. And after that, I did start looking locally and I hired a VA locally and I was able to have make connections with people locally who could help me set up certain things. I got somebody to help me with my website. I hired a local person to set up my website and my payment portals. And I started looking within my network here. However, when I started, I did look outside. I did do that thing. But it took me spending the money and realizing that it was not the investment that I should have made to realize, oh, okay, I actually need to look closer to home. And I was so grateful to the conversation that we had after that initial thread because you were able to share some of your experience and what you would have done to help you on that stage. And I was like, yes, we need to have more conversations like this. We need to That solidified this, we need to look locally. We need to hire locally. And I was so glad that I made that shift, that mindset shift to not always be looking outside of our borders and realize, hey, if I invest in our borders, I'm also signaling to everyone outside, signaling to the universe that I am worthy of being invested in because I'm invested in people like me. So it's also a degree of we have to advocate for ourselves. We have to lift up other people like us because if you are not going to pay a Trini, why should somebody else?
Yeah. And I'll also be fully transparent. I have invested in the foreign coaches as well. But my first coach was a Trinidadian. I got what I needed from that. And I felt like I needed something more. And I don't regret that experience in the least because it taught me so much. It prepared me so much on how to compete on a global scale. So on that note, it's not that you shouldn't invest in them. It's that you should spread the money around.
Yes.
There should be a hybrid, you know, and at some point, like my main point of that tea was to just reflect and be like, hey, if I can't afford X, why am I spending here? Maybe I should spend here and then, you know, stretch and go to this next level. So that's really all it's all about. It's not that you shouldn't. It's just that I feel like we're so enamored with, you know, the glossiness of the American coaches and, you know, the nice shiny houses and the lifestyle marketing. Again, it's all the what we push that on Instagram. And it's like,
we say foreign is better.
Instagram
right?
is just
this,
so.
This attitude.
I think, that's the point that I'm getting at. It's like through and through, we constantly devalue even our own selves through how we perceive everything foreign to be better versus we have good stuff here too.
Yes.
Is that also is a point of frustration.
Yes. And we have,
I think it's important to invest
people
all around. It does help because the American or the foreign coaches prepare you for how to do business abroad. And not just coaches, the courses provided, etc. Bought courses. Yes. I've bought a lot of things, but it's all around.
Same. Yeah, I'm always like purchasing courses and doing this and doing programs. I love to learn, as you can tell, like I've done a lot of studies. So I don't think there's anything wrong with investing outside. And if we're just looking at volume, the talent pool and the resource availability outside of the borders is going to be bigger just because there are more people. But we're also
I think we should have that exposure, which that's why we need both. We need to invest on locally and internationally.
Yes. We have to both lift ourselves up, because if we're asking people to invest in us and invest in Caribbean people, but we're not willing to invest in Caribbean people, then what message are we sending there? We have to also be willing to invest in our people and to look for services within our Caribbean borders and our Caribbean region and make connections and community here as well as outside. We need to have both, because that is how we not only lift ourselves up on the international stage, but we also lift our community up together.
Amen. Well said. So one last thing I wanted to touch on before we close off is the topic of, we chatted about how we also need allies and more than just coaches and mentors, but we need people to sponsor us.
Yes. Yes. Listen, community, 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 I cannot say it enough, is our biggest asset in the region. I myself, when I was starting out, I did quite a lot of things for free when I was starting out. And I'm not recommending anybody do this. I'm just telling you what my experience was. I did stuff for free because I wanted to get testimonials, I wanted to get exposure, and I wanted to make connections. So that was my focus when I was starting out. What that helped me do, though, is it helped me identify people who were willing to use their platforms to promote me, and willing to use their influence to lift me up. Because as Caribbean people, we talked about all of the disadvantages that we see, that we experience in the algorithms and with the perception of us and getting paid. So if you have an ally in the global north, or a white ally, or somebody who is already established, who can use their platform, their influence, to kind of pull you up with them, that helps you. That helps you to bring down the barriers to access, because it not only exposes you to their audience, it also adds credibility, because now this person who already has this level of credibility is endorsing you and is saying, hey, this is somebody that I trust. So it really lifts you up, and it enables you to have more access, to get more clients, to get more visibility and exposure. So identifying allies, identifying those people who are not only willing to pay you, but are also willing to say, hey, look at this person. We like them. We trust them. You should buy from them. And say it publicly, you know, say it with their chest, as I see. That is going to really, really elevate you as a business owner. That is something absolutely, absolutely need to have. Absolutely need.
Thank you. That I really wanted that point to be emphasized, because, you know, I wouldn't be where I am today if it wasn't for sponsors, you know, not just mentors, people who are just going to give you advice, even though the advice from certain mentors has been so, so valuable, even way more than any one coach that I would have purchased from. Like, I've gotten so much value, and I'm so grateful for those who take the time out to mentor and, you know, just be patient. This person is someone who I finally felt seen by when it, with regards to this issue. The energy in the room was completely different. You know, you're accustomed, like, you know, dropping the frustration a little here and there, seeing who will hear you. But this felt so much different. Like, no, I get you. I understand what you're saying. And just to hear that from your American and Canadian peers, I don't take them for granted at all. Just them looking back at me and be like, I see you, does so much. And then those are those people who tend to be the ones who actually advocate for you and, you know, take you under their wing, etc., etc. It helps so much. So that's the kind of networking that I wanted to be highlighted as one of the solutions to take away from this episode.
And it's not just networking. But in order
to be there too, you have to be pounding the pavement that when they do check you out, they see like, oh, she has this going on, she has that going on, you know, because I don't think I would be in this position if I wasn't ready myself. I used to be tweaking my website all the time, fixing this. I always wanted to be ready. And I finally kind of like let my shoulders on, like, oh, it's fine. When that individual like look at my website, I'm like, you're fine. Like, you have everything, like everything's in order. And it's like, oh, I don't need to do more, because I always have this mindset that I need to do more and more and more and more. So definitely having those sponsors that would
I think you may
break down really, those barriers really is definitely necessary.
Okay. Yes, I think the point that you made about networking important. It's so important, because it's like you don't want to just, it's not just about meeting people and having community. Yes, it is about that. And it is about getting clients and getting people to buy from you. But more than that, you need people who are going to give you access to rooms and spaces and resources that you don't have access to before. So I have a friend, she's in the US. She's one of somebody who I met online. I can't even remember how I met her. I think it was on Facebook, but we had a friendship and then it grew into a business partnership. And she's somebody who speaks my name in different rooms, who recommends me, who gives me access when she has certain courses. And I'm like, you know, I'm really struggling with how to do this. And she's like, oh, well, I have this course. Do you want to do this? Or do you want to come onto my platform? Do you want to have a call with me so I can help you set up this thing? Let me go check out your website. Let me read this post that you're doing, and I can help you tweak it and get the resources and make sure that it's really up to standard. You know, that is somebody that you want to have on your team. You want to have people who will say, hey, I have a membership. Do you want to come and speak in it? Or I'm having this event. Do you want to come and do something in it? And who will use their platforms, who will use their resources and use their access to help you get the access that you otherwise would not get. Because we really need to use that as stepping stones, because otherwise we're going to just be facing a lot of closed doors and we're going to be frustrated and say, why are these doors not open? You know, we need people to open the doors for us.
Yeah. Message. Okay, so we have covered quite a lot. Tay, I just want to thank you again for, you know, coming on this podcast, accepting this invite. Like I said, I'm so happy to have crossed paths with you on Threads. Yay, Threads. I think Threads is one of the few things that Instagram has done that is like a good thing in recent times.
So much. I love it. It's such a good
platform. And honestly, it does feel a little more equitable.
Yes.
And on the topic of equity, it does feel a little more equitable there. I feel seen more equally rather than like suppressed. to will need a specific audience. I feel like I see different things, and I feel like many different people see me on Threads. So, but yes, overall, I enjoy Threads. It's really good conversation, and it's one of the best things that Instagram has done recently.
Yes, I love Threads. I think I've made some wonderful connections there. I don't know what is different about the algorithm, but I think it really helps be more visible. And, you know, just to shoot in a little last point, I think it's also important to identify the platforms that are going to really help you be more visible. So, you know, if you're trying and trying and trying to grow on Instagram, don't just stay on Instagram. Branch out, experiment with other things, see what else is going to help you instead of just kind of sticking to this one thing. Be willing to experiment a little bit and try out something new and see where you can make the connections that you really want to make.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point. I really like that point. I mean, I'm one that will always experiment, and I tested out Threads and I love it. So
yes,
yeah, solid advice, and go check out Threads, join the conversations, and just, you know, expand your horizons. Any last words that you want to leave with the listener? Anything you want to leave them with, you know, whether local, international, just overall on this topic, what would you want the listener to leave with?
I would just say, don't give up. If you are a person of color or part of any kind of diverse community, whether you're neurodivergent, chronically ill, don't get discouraged. Don't allow the algorithm or capitalism or imperialism or whatever it is to stop you from doing the thing that you love. Because we need your voice, we need your perspective, we need your unique viewpoints, because that is how we're going to advance. That is how we are going to build community. That is how we're going to change the status quo of what is happening online. It's not by you silencing yourself. It's not by you burning your business to the ground. It's not by you packing it up and calling it a day because you're like, this is too frustrating. It is by you continuing to show up, continuing to speak up, continuing to make space for yourself, even when it feels hard, even when it feels like nobody's listening, because I guarantee you, people are listening. People will be listening, and you will be so surprised the impact that you make if you keep going.
Thank you so much. And just one last thing is that that's so good of advice, and it's a testimony, because if you did not make that thread, we wouldn't be here today. If you did not make that post on threads again, getting all the points, we wouldn't be here today. yeah, so definitely don't stifle your voice, just find these right spaces to do it in as well. Yeah. All right, so if you have made it this far in the episode, I want to thank you for hanging in there with us. That means that this episode was really something that you needed to listen to. So if you've made it this far in the episode, definitely leave your comments. If you're listening on Spotify, you see that, you know, comment box. Let us know what you thought about the episode. Share this with someone who needs to hear it. Slide it in somebody's LinkedIn DMs, because this is such an important topic as part of Black History Month, as part of, you know, diversity, equity, and inclusion. This is a really important conversation. So please, 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 we really appreciate when you share this podcast, like it, comment, engage with it, because it allows these important topics and issues to be heard by those who need to hear it. So Tay, can you let the audience know how they can get in contact with you and stay connected with you?
Yes, of course. So I am at the Tay Francis on pretty much everything. I'm on Instagram, Threads, LinkedIn, and my website is www.thetayfrancis.com. I do copywriting services and astrology and human design and all sorts of good stuff. So if you're interested in things like that, you can check me out. But I do have a blog. It is on my website. I talk about human design and astrology for thought leaders and change makers. So it's a little bit of a different approach to human design and leadership and astrology. So if you want to read about that, you want to know more about human design, about how to apply it to your business or your professional life, you can read my blog. My website will be in the show notes. So that's where the blog is.
Okay, awesome. Thank you so much, T. Until the next one, have a great one.